morning, Rodney.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm quarantined.
So am I. So we're talking from an almost social distance here. That may be why I'm shouting. And today, as far as we can tell, and we voted on it, is Monday, May 18th.
18th.
2020. In the year of the great quarantine,
yes.
And we are sitting in beautiful Wimberley, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is any place to be that's a great place for quarantine, I think this would be one of them, don't you?
I'm pretty happy with it. I've got nature. I've got deer and fox and birds. And it's not elephants and giraffes, but...
Well, we'll get to those, and it might be again someday. Uh-huh. I have cows where I live.
Yeah. You do have cows where you are.
I do have cows.
Well, you have to drive slow when you go home.
Very slow, yes. It's not like driving slow because you're going to hit a deer. But if you hit a cow that weighs like 3 billion pounds, that's a little different thing.
And I actually saw a guy that hit a cow once, and I'm still trying to figure out how he did it.
Because they move slow.
It's not like a deer where it just darted out in the road.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves here, Rodney. I am Dr. Chick Morgan, the Cowgirl Diva, and I am here with Rodney Bursiel. And there are so many ways to describe you, Rodney. Let's talk about you first, and then I'll talk a little bit about myself and what we're trying to do with this podcast, which we have named aptly Passport, Please. And we are envisioning enlightening and meaningful conversations about all kinds of journeys, inner, outer, geographical, spiritual, intellectual. And this is our day one to start taking you on those. So I'm going to be in the interviewer's seat first and let our audience know, probably most of you who are listening at this point do know Rodney Bursiel or me. But I first met Rodney, not even met him really, in one of his many, many, many roles as the official photographer of the Blue Rock Artist Ranch and Recording Studio, where he has a portfolio of absolutely iconic photographs of some of the biggest musicians in the world. And Rodney was always this little darting presence, like a little snail darter in the dark, beautiful studio room of Blue Rock where the concerts were, taking fabulous pictures. And I guess I knew you that way, Rodney, for at least a year, might even be 2 years.
Before we got involved with all this?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, how long have you been out there?
About 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I think this season would have been 12 for me.
Oh, my gosh. Well, clearly, like in everything else, you're way ahead of me. But
I've been doing that for a long time. So. But yeah,
well,
it's been a nice intro to a lot of great things, being out there.
Yeah, for both of us.
This being one of them.
Yeah. I'm a volunteer, and I'm on the foundation board, and also a musician and singer-songwriter, so I loved it, and we never really had a meaningful conversation, but I did have a radio show on Wimberley Valley Radio, which is a really wonderful, hardworking local station. It has a lot of good music, and I had a show called On River Time, and was looking for interesting guests, and I thought about inviting Rodney on my show. But to be honest, I was very intimidated by you, Rodney. You were always this very efficient presence, and you had this reputation as this, world-renowned photographer. So I do what I always did with my radio shows. I looked him up. I looked up a bio, and it got even worse. It got even worse. He not only photographs musicians, he was a major scuba diver, and he is this absolutely gorgeous movie actor. What was your big role in?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a big role.
Well, it was
my biggest role.
What was your biggest role, Rodney?
It was Pearl Harbor. I was the sailor that saved the dog.
Oh, so. Man. If you're going to save anything, let's save the dog. Anybody can save the girl, right?
But it was Cuba Gooding Jr.'s, his character's dog in the movie, and I got to save it. So
wow.
Not sure.
So I'm seeing this, movie star picture of Rodney in his World War II uniform saving the dog, and he's this photographer, and I've been hearing about his excursions all around the world, diving, and next thing I know, I look at his photographs, he's with sharks and whales, and as you like to say, sharks, whales, musicians, and
crocodiles,
and only one of these is dangerous, which I think is one of the best lines ever. But I figured, what the heck, and I at least had the good sense to invite him on my show, and we just had a remarkable conversation about.
And it's so funny too, because you talk about, you know, your comment is like, how you were intimidated, and you invite me to be on this radio show, and I was so nervous because I. I'd never done that. And
which floored me.
Yeah.
I figured you must have been on every media outlet in the country. But.
I'd never done a radio show like that and being put on the spot, I guess.
Yeah, it was live, yeah. So, yeah.
And after I did it, I fell in love with it.
And we said, yeah. Hey, this was fun.
let's do some more of this.
And since the radio show, everything evaporates after 7 days, we had no track record that we could build on. But the thing that, I teased Rodney on the show because I'm old enough to remember the Seinfeld episodes with this character, Jay Peterman. Mm-hmm. And he was probably my very favorite Seinfeld character. And Jay Peterman was this swashbuckling, very articulate, very well-dressed, debonair world traveler. So anytime somebody would comment, or say something to Jay Peterman, and he'd say, I'm going to use some Rodney's locations. Oh, I picked that up when I was wrestling with the crocodiles in Tonga from a little native lady who was sitting there stitching it by hand, and it is the only one in the world. And that's how I felt talking to Rodney. It was like everything started with, oh, well, I was in the lower depths of the oceanic colonies and faced with an underwater crocodile. And we're going to talk a lot about, more specifically, about your travels. And I love doing the radio show, and I won't say a varied and interesting, but I certainly have a checkered past. Mm-hmm. And we decided that this might be a fun thing to explore for the two of us, just to keep the conversation mm-hmm. going. And for us, it's really about the conversation and where that can take us.
Yeah.
Your turn, Rodney.
My turn. You're the interviewer. Let's see.
All right, you have 90 seconds, and then I will rescue you.
Oh man, you got me on the spot here now. What?
We'll come back to you, Rodney.
Yeah.
I'm a transplanted Texan, transplanted back to New York and back to Texas, and loving everything about the arts right now. I shed my
how did you get to Texas? Because
I mean, after my 43 years away,
I guess let's just go there. Where were you? Are you originally from Texas?
Well,
I thought you were East Coast.
I lived most of my life on the East Coast. I left mm-hmm. right after I graduated from Texas Tech, Red Raiders. Yay, yay! Mm-hmm. Grew up in San Antonio. Oh, we got a Raider family. Awesome. I didn't think about them for 43 years while I was in New York. My dad was in the military and stationed at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio for most of my childhood. I went to high school here and some elementary, but anyway. Went to Texas Tech, and like all girls of my generation, 2 weeks after I graduated, I got married because I was right on schedule.
And, the schedule that I missed.
Good for you. That's not true. I wouldn't change anything. I often wonder about other life paths, but it's been very rich and interesting. And my husband was a West Pointer and got mm-hmm. transferred to West Point as a football coach. How about that? So talk about tough duty. About a year, not quite a year after we were married, about 6 months after we were married, and I'd never been to the Northeast. Washington, D.C. was as far north as I'd gone. Lived overseas in Germany, but never been up there, and there was just something about it. I hit New York, and I never came back for 43 years.
Wow.
I just didn't want to do it. It was something almost mystical about feeling a resonance with a geography and a place. And I stayed, he didn't, and that was that. And then 43 years later, my mom and dad had retired in San Antonio. My mom had passed in January of 2013, and my dad and I were always very close. And he had increasing dementia, so I thought, well, as long as he still knows who I am. And I was in a transitional stage of my life, and came to Wimberley because I have a brother and sister-in-law who live here and didn't know much about it. I thought I could do my 2 years, you know, it's probably what it takes. Do anything I needed to, you know, and then get the heck back to either the West Coast or the East Coast. And I didn't know Wimberley was Wimberley, and artists and photographers and musicians and sculptors and writers. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So
yeah, Wimberley is a strange place in that regard.
Isn't it? It's mystical. It's magical.
I first came here 25 years ago and have moved away a couple times for big endeavors. You know, it's I moved to L.A., when I went and, you know, got to work on Pearl Harbor and numerous other little projects. And I remember the day that I left, I was driving down 1492 and across the river, and I'm just looking around, I'm going, looking at, you know, the simple things, fence posts and trees and birds. And I was like, I don't want to leave. And then I got to LA and of course, you know, got in my groove, but I was always thinking about this. And after 2 years, I, long story short, came back and I was like, I'm done with LA, because just this all came rushing back what it was. And then I had given up on acting and had slowly started getting into photography. And I thought I would go back to LA and try and segue all my movie contacts into photography. And went back out, and I was there not even 2 months. I was like, I left for a reason, and I came back to Wimberley.
Hightailed it back, as we said.
And since then, I've traveled all over the world and been to some amazing places, but I just, this is home.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons, and we'll get some scientific experts here someday to talk about those, about the ley lines and the rock structures and the sacred wells. Yeah. And I mean, it's pretty interesting. But you mentioned...
I'd like to know more about that.
Well, I happen to know quite a bit about that.
we'll cover that then. Yeah, because I don't know the science behind it.
It's the magic of science, or the science of magic. Mm. It really, truly is magical. And I've been fascinated about it ever since I started exploring it. But you mentioned something that is really at the heart, other than we can just, you know, jawbone for hours about everything. That's the heart of what we're trying to build here in our podcast. And that was about traveling the world. And I think it's certainly one of the things that is one of our common threads. You know, I grew up an army brat and traveled, and then my corporate career traveled everywhere. You've certainly traveled to amazing places. I don't like the word exotic because that seems dismissive, but just amazing places. And if you don't mind, let's share a little bit about how we came to land on putting the bell jar, if you will, over this idea of passport, please. And this was the evening at Blue Rock that we said, you know, we just got to keep talking about some stuff. Because you had a pretty dramatic event in your life that this whole subject of passports came up.
Yeah, do we want to tell the whole story, or enough of it?
Enough of it. If you go on, you know, don't tell anything you don't want to tell. You don't have to name names or anything, but I think it's heart and soul of what we discovered about this idea.
Without going into too many details, and the people that know the whole story, you know, I guess they're the only ones that really need to know the whole story.
And their lips are sealed, other than broadcasting it around the world on our podcast here. So.
But I was in a relationship with someone who we had very similar lifestyles, you know, traveling and scuba diving and photography. And I let this person into my life, and things didn't work out, and because of that, I let her stay in my house for a couple days, you know, to gather her things and move on. And when I got back to my house, I was out about $25,000 of personal things, you know, camera gear to jewelry to, you know, hard drives, computer, you name it. But the the biggest thing, the one that just sunk me, and it was actually the first thing that I went and checked. For some reason, I knew it was going to be gone.
Oh, wow.
And it was my passport. I went and checked my drawer. I've got a little passport wallet. It had my passport in it. It had my dive card that was when I was certified when I was 16 years old. From my dad taught me through YMCA. So the card's completely irreplaceable because, you know, YMCA doesn't do that anymore. It had, I had all kind of, you know, currencies from around the world in there. It was my little packet of my travel life. And, you know, and it, I call my passport my favorite book, you know, because I, and I, you know, my new one, I've started filling it back up and you know, I'm looking at my stamps. And after all that, my mom gave me hers and my dad's old passports. And those are kind of interesting because they're completely different and they're actually very stereotypical at the time. And I think my mom's, it even says in there, you know, refers to her as being the wife or something. It, you know, like now it would be considered ridiculously sexist,
but when you said that and the way you phrased it that evening, we were there was a fabulous Blue Rock Foundation songwriter retreat, 4-day weekend with, was it Jonathan Berg? No, I mean Jonathan Brooke. Was it before that? Maybe it was Scott, Daryl Scott, I think. I don't remember.
I may have been Jonathan.
I think that I might have been Jonathan Brooke, an enormously, ridiculously, insanely talented songwriter. And we had just been, you know, afterwards, the foundation people and the volunteers are just kind of hanging around having a couple of glasses of incredibly good red wine. And as you were telling that story, what you said was, you know, the thing that was the worst that she took was my passport. And I instantly got that, having grown up living with the passport and having the family passport, like you were talking about your parents. So we started talking about why should that matter? You know, yeah, you can get a replaced passport, you know. And what we discovered is so much of our lives, and we're talking about geographic passports today, are embedded in what that little, in our case, blue book represents. And those funny marks and the stamps, which are also diminishing. And like you, I've kept all of mine, and sometimes I just take them out. And
yeah, so I saw somebody was recently posted, they had, I don't remember what the whole story was, but they had something stolen. And she was, you know, saying that, you know, well, they're just things. It's not that big of a deal, but it's the energy that's in those things. And, you know, like a lot, you know, most things can be replaced, but when it's got that history and that thing has been with me everywhere. And, you know, I remember every stamp. I remember every, you know, watching that.
And waiting for that sound. And were you going to get a smile or a glare, depending on what country you're in?
And then my very first trip after I got my new passport was to Cuba. And I've been to Cuba several times before. But to me, that's like, you know, that's kind of right now with all the weird stuff going on with travel. That's kind of the creme de la creme of passport stamps to have. So I got my brand new passport and I'm walking through, I hand it to her, you know, take off my hat, do the whole thing. She hands it back to me. I walk through and I open it up and I'm looking and I was like, go every page. I'm like, where is it? And I went and finally it was just faded. You could barely see it. And I was like,
no,
oh my God,
I'm going back.
So, but you know, of course I stamp it leaving and the one leaving was much better, but still it just,
I've got a stamp at my one of my old passports. When I entered Prague on May 1st, I don't remember the year, but it was, and we were all jet lagged, but they were having the May Day parade. It was still communist and under the Russian Soviet Union. And so we went to the May Day parade and turned out to be the last May Day parade in their history because that following November was the the wall. And so the next time I went a year later, you know, it was an entirely different experience. You still got the stamp, but you didn't have the German shepherds, you know, snarling at your heels. Yeah. You know, they were quietly in the corner for sure, but they weren't about to attack. So it's, I look at that and all of that comes back to me.
Yes.
That experience that nobody will ever have again.
It's a magical little book.
It's one moment in time in your life that opens a doorway to experiences, both tragic and wonderful and enlightening and sometimes boring.
So now we're, I guess we're here to talk about those events and what other events. And yeah, I think it's going to be fun and interesting with, you know, when we have guests on here.
We can't divulge them right now.
Well, no, we're not going to.
But things
that they've done and
stellar, you know, list. Yeah,
that's like my bucket list. My passport stamps. It grows daily. Every trip I go on, or I meet somebody and I hear their stories, like, well, I got to do that. I got to do that. Yeah. I got to do that. And I'm hoping that's what this.
That's what exactly we're going to talk about. Because the other thing about passports that we have discovered, I don't even know how to describe it, which is not disheartening. It just, something is lost. Is all of the technology now around the passports. I mean, the first time I went through and you just shove it under that little thing and there is nobody there to stamp it. You know, they don't.
See, I haven't experienced that yet. I guess I've been lucky. I've been hearing that, you know, we're all going digital. But so far, every place that I've gone, they're still stamping it. But I have had friends that have had that where they don't. But if you ask...
Oh, really?
They still have them back there, and you can get them to.
But see, one of the reasons you haven't experienced that, and what we're going to talk about in the weeks and months ahead, is the places you go.
You know? Well, yeah.
I'm sure Tonga isn't technologically, you know, cutting edge.
You pull into, you know, like when you leave the Houston airport, you've got the duty free where it's just, it seems like miles of alcohol and perfume and cigarettes and all this stuff that, you know, tax free. You fly into Tonga, there's a card table, and it's got about 10 bottles of liquor on it.
And they're half open, right?
that's their little duty-free station.
Wow. And just as a teaser, I mean, some of the other places, what was it like in Cuba?
What part?
Oh, good question. Was it the crocodiles? Was it the duty free? Well, I guess there's a lot to pick from.
Yeah.
So when you get off in the airport, is that a real modern airport? Or?
No, it's it's not modern at all. Honestly, though, it was a little more than what I expected, a little more advanced than what I expected, but it was still, you know, it was very basic, but it's utter chaos in there. You know, if you land at the wrong time, you can literally, it could take you 2 to 3 hours to get your luggage and get out, and you hope that you don't get pinpointed to dig through your stuff. And like I said, I've been 3-4 times now, and I was only stopped once, and you know, they want to know what all the camera gear's for, and you know, what are you doing? And so, but and the strange thing, or I guess, or interesting thing, I guess, is 90% of the people working in the airport were women, and they're all dressed, you know, I guess, you know, it's kind of military type wardrobe. But it's done very sexy.
Oh, right. that's a juxtaposition I'm really struggling with, right?
It's just kind of an odd experience. And when you get off the plane, as soon as you step into the building, you're putting your luggage through X-ray machines, and it's like, didn't we do all that, you know, before we got on the plane? And then, you know, you go through the X-ray, and then you get all your stuff, and then they stop you, and then they'll, you know, if they pick you, they'll dig through it some more. It's not a fun airport. And my
unlike Singapore, or something like that. Yeah. I've got two pairs of the most wicked 4-inch high heels I will ever buy in my life at midnight.
But I remember my first time there, coming home. There was bad weather, and every flight was canceled. Mm. And you're just sitting there going, well, "How am I? You know, I'm never going to get out of here." And you're sitting there, and you can see out, you know, on the tarmac. And out of nowhere, here comes the Southwest Airlines. And I was like, it was the best feeling ever.
Thank you, Jesus.
But yeah, like all the other times, I haven't had any major problems. But I mean, I've talked to people who'll never go back because it was so bad. But the overall experience being in Cuba, yeah, I'll go back anytime I can.
Well, one of the things that we are excited about exploring in this series of conversations is, as we talked about it, passports are a physical item representing a transition from one country to another country. But what really grabbed me when we had our initial conversations and when I had you on my radio show, it's you're traveling usually for a particular reason, and in your case it's photography, and it's to photograph. Okay, if you're listening to this, you're not going to believe anybody would have a list like this, but great white sharks, other kinds of sharks, huge whales. Is it stingrays or manrays? I don't know the difference.
Both.
Okay, that's good. That's easy. Cuban crocodiles, which we're going to learn a lot about. Big teeth on those suckers. And other animals, but also your recent love affair with Africa.
Yeah,
we're going to spend a lot of weeks talking about that. That's just, it's touched your soul, and through your photographs and your commentary, it's touched so many others. The thing that came through so clearly when I had you on my radio show was, yeah, the J. Peterman quality, which you are so totally unaware of and oblivious to, is just so charming, Rodney. You didn't even know who J. Peterman was, you know.
I'm not that young.
Oh, okay. But it's not
I watch Seinfeld.
It's not just the sheer extraordinariness, there's a new word, of the places you go and the things that you do and the photographs that you take, which are exquisite and multi-award winning. It's the relationship that you have with these creatures. It's the reverence that comes through, not only when you talk about them, but in your photographs, for sure. So when we talk about passports, we want to have a really expanded definition of that being, yeah, the thing that takes us from here to there and great stories and how those things have changed. But also at the other end of that, it's a liminal journey. It's a transformational experience to go from here to there. And when you're there, it's a transformational experience, but just the getting there, there's something that shifts inside of us, our perspective, that remains unchanged. And if you wouldn't mind, one of your stories, of many stories, that I love was, it might have been the first time that you were so consciously aware of that, when you had been, were you scuba diving or something, and you had the mother, was it the mother dolphin or the mother whale and the baby, and then you got back up on the party boat, and your whole world was just upended.
The orcas?
Orcas, yeah.
Yeah, that was, literally my first dive trip back in the water after not diving for 20 years. Huh. I right before that, I'd gone to Guadalupe Island, you know, with the great whites, but that's cage diving, and you know, so it wasn't, you know, scuba diving. But I had not been diving in at least 20 years.
Why was that?
Well, my dad taught. He sold his business right as I went to college, and I just went on a different path, and he quit doing it, and we all just quit traveling, and life just kind of changed. But I had on the Guadalupe trip, I had heard about Socorro, and I was like, well, I'm going to go do that. not.
What is Socorro?
It's Socorro Islands. It's in Mexico. In fact, it's the same boat that we take to go to Guadalupe is, you know, runs out to the Socorros. And yeah, I didn't know what I was in for. I mean, it's not easy diving. You know, I grew up diving in the Caribbean, which is like diving in a swimming pool. Yeah, you know, but out here, it's, you know, it's big animals and it's currents and it's deep water, and I didn't know what I'd gotten into. But when we got there, day one, there was a mother whale with her escort and baby, and we had spent 2.5 days just in, you know, hanging with these whales, and the mom just would sit there and the baby'd come up and, you know, dive down and come back up and take a breath and swim around all of us. I mean, literally face to face, I mean, inches away. And, you know, you're not approaching them. They're coming to you. And you bonded with these animals. And the boat was anchored off the island, and we take the little pongas off to get in. And we had been on a dive where we had gone down, and then when we came up, you know, the mom and the baby were still there, and we had run out of air. So we throw all of our tanks into the boat, and then we're just snorkeling around, you know, hanging out with them. And then we all got back into the boat, and I'm literally stepping up, you know, one of the guys is, you know, grabbed my hand to pull me up onto the boat, and I hear all this thrashing, and I'm mid-step, and I look back, and there's just dorsal fins everywhere. And I was just like, what is going on? And then I saw the orca fin come up, and my stomach just dropped. And we all jumped back in the boat and went back out. And it was two orcas had come in and, you know, taken the baby. And we followed it out to sea for about 1.5 hours and witnessed the whole thing. And it was just that. And I've got a whole blog that I wrote on. I don't consider myself a writer, but sometimes stories just write themselves. And that just came out, and it changed my DNA that day. In fact, we got back into Mexico. The boat left out of Cabo, you know, Party Central. And we come back in on Super Bowl night. So parties everywhere. And I was like, I don't even want to get off this boat. I don't want to see humans. Yeah, it was a life-changing moment. And I, you know, there's...
Is that the one?
That's the orca. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was... That was the moment for me where, yeah, my life changed. Everything changed.
Did it change what you wanted to do with your photography?
It
just was a result of, or was your photography just a natural result of what happened?
Well, I guess I was always reinventing and looking for different things. And, you know, because every photographer develops a style. And I had started getting that, and people are like, oh, hey, you know, I saw your photo, and, you know, without even looking at the byline, I knew it was yours. And so when I start getting to that point, I was like, that's when it's time for me to change and do something different. And like right now, I'm even kind of, and maybe it's because of all this quarantine stuff, but I'm kind of in this rut where I'm ready to figure something else out. And I don't know what that is just yet, but I'm constantly evolving and changing and growing. And I'm sure that trip had a lot to do with it. And, you know, it made me want to see more and do more. That's all.
Well, and you seem to gravitate towards mammal subjects that are certainly large and imposing, I guess, is the word.
You know what's weird is, yeah, and I think that's probably part of why I got out of scuba or didn't pursue it anymore, because it was Caribbean diving. I never saw a shark. It was always reef fish and sponges and, you know.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
But. No, but I mean, yeah, it was, I mean, it was fun for a while, but, you know, after you've seen an angelfish, you know, 100 times, mm-hmm. it just, I want to see something that can eat me. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to see something big that, you know, I want to experience this. And so, and honestly, I don't even know how all that started. Cause, you know, I've been doing, you know, music photography for 15 years and I've just been wanting to do something else. And I remember, you know, when I first got into photography, I had that thought as like, I don't want to shoot nature. Mm. You know, I want to photograph people. I want to capture personalities. And I was like, for some reason, nature photography seemed boring to me. Mm. But I guess that's because I hadn't experienced what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
You know, being face to face with a great white shark, that kind of changed that.
Changes your perspective, yeah. doesn't it? Well, that's one of the things that we're going to deliciously pursue in the coming months, particularly. For instance, I understand that June is Shark Week on TV.
I believe it's June.
We're going to focus a few conversations, or part of them anyway, on sharks, which even the thought of it, talking about it, scares the dickens out of me. But and then we're going to talk about crocodiles, and we've got some folks who are lining up that are spectacular, interesting musicians, that many of them also have this connection with nature. And part of what we really want to explore is not just the adventure, not just the getting to and from, but what is that transformative experience when you get there, whether it's, you know, geography or personal relationship or, I don't know, spiritual travel, something of a from here to there conversation. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, everybody's got some kind of travel story. Yeah. You know, it's...
Yeah, you got to get beneath that. We often talk about getting the story behind the story. Mm-hmm. You know, the travel stories are really fun, at least to the person who's telling them most of the time. Mm-hmm. But what did it do to you? How have you been changed from that? And sometimes you're changed immediately, and sometimes it's 20 years later. At least that's been my experience. Mm-hmm. You mentioned your blog, and before we bring this first little episode to close, why don't you tell folks where they can find you and your work and other things in your artistic endeavors?
Well, the obvious are my, I guess the one that where I'm up to date the most is Instagram. And of course I got Facebook and all that. And then I've got a website, but I seem to be more up to date with Instagram. That's where most of my current stuff is. My website's kind of difficult to keep updated. So you know my technical abilities. You know, Instagram, you just push a button and the photo goes up there. So, but yeah, and that's just my name, just Rodney Burciel, which is Burciel, and that's my everything. Facebook, Instagram, and website is all Rodney Burciel.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm so looking forward to this, Rodney. I'm glad we finally literally got off the dime to start doing it. And I know this is going to morph and change exactly how it should. And we will have a website link for us, for people who want to listen to this again, and a few other things that we're exploring. But we thought instead of just sitting in the waiting lounge of the terminal, we'd actually get on the first plane that came by and see where it took us. That's a horrible mixed metaphor. But.
I like it.
All right, Rodney. Until then, remember, I came across this today. When I had my radio show, I had my tagline. Remember, it was... anyway. But we're going to explore. We're going to experiment with different taglines. And this one is, not all those who wander are lost. I'm not even quite sure what that means. But let's leave our listeners with that. And we will talk to you again.